Hello and welcome to the first RHS Gardening Podcast of 2017. Here at the Royal Horticultural Society, we're passionate about gardens, gardening and all things green. Each episode of our fortnightly podcast is packed with practical seasonal advice, features and interviews with people who share a passion for plants. We cover all aspects of horticulture, from growing houseplants to broccoli, black spot on roses, to the challenges of creating lush green spaces in small urban plots. So it doesn't matter whether you're a horticultural veteran or a novice. In our podcast, there's something to interest everyone who loves gardens. My name's Jenny Bowden. I'm one of the team of horticultural advisors based here at RHS Garden Wisley in Surrey. Coming up later, our expert advisors tackle your troubling gardening questions. But first, as is traditional at the beginning of the year, it's time to reflect on the past and look forward to the months ahead. And what a year 2017 promises to be here at Wisley. The garden is undergoing a radical multi-million pound transformation. New plants, new garden displays and new buildings for education and leisure. So much more for visitors to enjoy and be inspired by. Here's garden curator Matthew Pottage to tell us more about the exciting plans for the year ahead.
So I'm Matthew Pottage and I'm the curator of Wisley Garden. If you've been to the garden, you may have walked down to 7 acres and collapsed with shock horror to see the grass borders have gone. That is part of the development for the new entrance, so the new cherry colonnade that everyone will walk through, a massive long avenue of flowering cherries, will be coming down to this area. The reason why we've ploughed ahead and moved these is we wanted to lift a lot of this in the autumn when the soil was still warm. This area does tend to get quite wet and we didn't really want to be ploughing this up in midwinter. So they've been lifted, they've been heeled in a temporary holding area. And some of them will be cleaned up because they did have some bindweed in them. They'll be split up, they'll be potted, and they'll be started again. And they will go into our Howard's Field area, the Heather Garden, when we're looking to redevelop that through the next 2 years. So loads of development there. The irises that were in the grass borders have already been replanted on the glasshouse landscape. And a lot of the agapanthus have gone to Battleston Hill. So we're in the process of just writing some more detailed signage to go out here now, but please do not worry or be dismayed. You know, the grasses haven't gone into the compost. We're not, you know, not going to do grasses again, but the first thing you see when you walk in couldn't have been a big grass border. You know, it would have been like a big wall. So that development's kicking off. If you've visited us again, you may have noticed trenches, you may have noticed some areas closed off. We're having to do a lot of the non-sexy, grotty infrastructure work, unfortunately, before the buildings go up, before the new welcome building goes in. So there are things like ducts for IT cabling, there's foul water drainage, new electric cabling. So, you know, it's just one of those things that needs to happen. This is part of our key investment programme. It's our some £60 million that's been spent at Wisley specifically, and it's to give us a new welcome experience, the new welcome building with new improved catering and shop facilities. If you've been to Wisley on a busy day, you'll know how crowded it is, how difficult it is to maybe get a table in the catering outlets. You don't feel like you can stop and browse in the bookshop because you just, you know, there's so little space in there. So part of it is to just give that feeling that you can come to Wisley on a busy day and it's still going to be a lovely experience. You know, we don't want people to think, oh, it's going to be so busy at Wisley today. So first of all, for the visitor experience, and then to increase our retail space, you know, it will be the biggest and best plant centre in the UK. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, that does help bring in our money for our charitable work. You know, we are a charity, we're not government funded, and that side of the business is very important. So that's very much there. But with those infrastructure works, they've also had some impact on the garden itself. The 7 acres path around the winter walk behind the lake, we needed to get a gas line from the Glasshouse Cafe to the entrance area. So that path was a bit of a mess. So we took the opportunity to put the gas main straight down the middle of the path. You may see it and think, oh my goodness, they've put down a black tar path. And that's what it is for the minute. But when the weather starts to warm up in the spring, we will roll a golden grit into that. So it will match the other big golden paths in the garden. And also, we will finish the rest of the 7 acre paths in the spring too. You'll see that most of them are done, but some of them aren't. But we didn't want to keep it closed off for the winter walk, which is now starting to come into its own. So please bear with us on the paths on 7 acres. They'll be finished in March 2017. So when you come and see that lovely new path around the back of the lake on 7 acres, you'll also notice some more winter walk planting. We're almost in the final stages now. That's been quite a long phased out project, the winter walk development, and a couple of more beds have been replanted, stripped out, refreshed. The team have gone crazy with Edgeworthias. They love Edgeworthias, and you know the scent they give is like nothing else. So it's a small cluster of yellow flowers. They normally open in January time after Christmas on bare stems, and the scent is like nothing else. And we do have one or two near the laboratory building. We know the visitors love them. They are absolute gems. And I'll leave it as a surprise. Go and see how many we've planted. They're intermingled with other winter interest things. It's not just a big boring mass planting, but they're very, very exciting.
Matthew Pottage, curator of the garden here at Wisley. You can find more information about the exciting plans for the new development at Wisley at rhs.org.uk/future. And RHS members can read regular progress updates every month in The Garden magazine, beginning in this month. You're listening to the RHS Gardening Podcast. Now, it's time to open your postbag of gardening questions. One of the many advantages to being an RHS member is that you can send your gardening queries to our expert advice team via phone, post, or email at any time of year, or even ask us in person by visiting the advice desks at RHS shows and events, and we'll try our best to solve your problems. So, let's join my colleagues to discuss some of the first questions of 2017.
Hello, I'm Lee Hunt from the RHS Gardening Advice team here at Wisley. Today I'm joined by Guy Barter.
Hello.
And Jenny Bowden.
Hello.
S. Sands has written in, should we pick up fallen apples and pears, or can they be left to compost as we would with other trees and bushes where they're basically just around the bottom? Many have fallen in the veggie patch. Do they need to be removed? We've already added many to the compost bins. So quite a few things that they're trying with the pears, but can they be left around, or should they be taken up and something better done with them? What do you think, Guy?
I think in general terms, it's always better to pick up fallen apples and pears because they could be carrying pests and diseases that will infect the trees next year. And if you consign them to a compost bin, they'll soon rot down. Many people suggest that apples and pears are too acid to rot, but I think that's rubbish. These are organic acids within apples and pears that soon break down naturally. However, having said that, I would say that birds are said to rather relish feeding on fallen apples and pears, which can often be full of maggots and things. So if you have somewhere where you can leave at least some fallen fruits for the birds to peck at, well away from your fruiting trees, ideally, then that would certainly be a good idea.
Jenny, the apples and pears are obviously going to be quite wet in the compost heap. What could they add to that to try and even out the mix?
You need to have a really good mix, ideally 50-50 of the softer materials, like indeed these fallen apples or pears. But if you're a bit short of woody material, any woody material is good. So shredded prunings, you can even use shredded paper from in the house if you shred your important documents. That's a very good addition to the compost. Mix it all well in. Insides of kitchen rolls and loo rolls, anything else, it's just sort of chewy bits, I call it, which balances out all the sogginess that you can get with kitchen waste and things like fallen apples and pears. So it's getting that balance of ideally about 50-50.
I would just mention that this season, of course, there's no shortage of fallen leaves, and mixing them into the compost would add that carbon-rich, dryish material.
Mm, absolutely. We've got an email here from Dorothy Nicholson in Raynham, who's also sent us a photograph to go with her inquiry. It's about an African violet, which she's grown from a cutting. The plant seems to have done pretty well, and it is in flower, but the outside leaves, they're not dying, but they look very, very limey, well, actually yellow in colour. And she's wondering what might have gone wrong. Has it outgrown its pot? Has it been overwatered? Or is it something else? She waters it from the bottom, which is always suggested, but it does have a tray underneath it. So what do we think about that? The central part looks in tip-top condition. It's just around the edges.
I don't think she's done half bad with this.
No, it looks pretty good.
I think this is elements of trying to get it into better condition. But I think it points up for us all who are growing African violets, how really to try and sort of keep them in tip-top condition. And lost that is getting the watering right, because the classic is they get too wet and then they all go limp. And then you want to water it more because it looks like it needs water, but actually what you've done is rot the roots, so it's struggling to take up the water and get it to the leaves. This is not that bad, but there's a little tray underneath, and what I generally do is push my finger to the top of the compost. As soon as that starts to feel dryish, I put some water in the bottom and let it soak up, and then not water it again until it starts to feel dryish. It'll quite happily cope with a little bit with that wet and dry, but at the same time it won't sit there saturated in a pool of water, and that's what tends to do for African violets.
I think what I'd do is knock it out of its pot and see what the state of the roots is. Then you can really see whether you've overdone it on the watering, or whether they're, if they're shriveled, then you know they've gone the other way. It is kind of oozing out of its pot a little, isn't it? So it may well have dried out and had more root than compost.
And also, if it's got a lot of roots around the outside of the pot, the root ball, when you take it out of its pot, really it indicates it's probably ready for the next size on. And not really the time to do it now, but come spring, come April time, then it's time to get it into some good compost in a slightly bigger pot. This one's probably about a 3.5 inch, so coming up for the sort of 10 centimetre size, and it could probably comfortably go into a 4 inch pot at this point. So again, sort of the 10-12 size. Now, these outer yellow leaves do look a bit damaged, and they're a little bit browny, I was noticing, on the edges as well. There's an element of some of these might be just older leaves, so you might be getting just a bit of turnover of new to old. So they can be just carefully pulled out, and if you pull them sideways, they will just come out at the base. However, just keeping the conditions even, plenty of not direct light, but good light is useful, because again, in the summer they will scorch, because these are plants that would naturally get a bit of shade under trees out there in the forests and the wilds where they come from. So I think it is just about keeping it nice and even.
To me, this is a classic sign of a nutrient deficiency. You can see it's the older leaves that have gone yellow, and the younger inner leaves appear to be beautifully green. So when this happens, you suspect that the plant is reallocating nutrients from the older leaves to the younger leaves. So when plants suffer from nutrient deficiency, it can be that they have insufficient nutrients and they need fertilizer or repotting, or it can be that the roots activity is compromised, typically by overwatering. It's worth mentioning that RHS members appear to kill more plants by love than neglect, and they express their love by overwatering in most cases. So it's an immobile nutrient, and the classical immobile nutrient is magnesium. So I suspect that there may be a case of magnesium uptake going wrong here. So I'm inclined to get some Epsom salts sold in any good garden centre and follow the instructions on those. And when the plant is suitably dry, not when it's wet, give it a supplementary feed with some magnesium salts and see how that works. When the sun comes up next spring, repotting into a slightly bigger pot will help it grow and get more nutrients. Don't repot it till then, otherwise there just isn't enough light coming in through the window for it to grow new roots and start scavenging the nutrients it needs. But on the whole, this looks like an excellent plant, and any inadvertent mistreatment should not be fatal. Maria Leakt has written in to say that she has a Trachelospermum jasminoides, which has done really well, except the last couple of years it goes black. It looks horrible, and it's staining the patio. She's taken to jet washing it. Jet washing the plant? That's interesting. But she's still... Oh, I think she means the patio. But she still cannot get all the black material off the patio. A photograph has been attached, which Lee and Jenny are peering at closely. Maria also mentions that she has a clay soil, so when she planted it, she dug a big hole and filled it with ericaceous compost, which she tops up once a year, and she also feeds it occasionally. It's on the southwest wall and has done really well, but it's this black stuff, she just can't deal with it. Jenny, have you got any thoughts here for Maria?
Sounds as though it's got a really bad attack, doesn't it? It sounds as though she has an attack of scale insects, And the scale insects are basically little creatures that are covered in literally a scale, and they suck the sap out. They normally live on the underside of the leaf, along the midrib. So if you turn the leaves over, you'll actually see those. They suck the sap out, and then the excess sap, which is very sugary, is exuded from the insects and drops onto the lower leaves, and then you get a mold growing on that sugar. Lots of energy in the sugar. So it's a secondary disease, it's called sooty mold. As a lot of diseases, they just explain what they look like. So to actually get rid of the mold, you'd have to wipe off every leaf or just wait for the plant to send out some fresh foliage. We had a Trachylospermum on the wall here at Wisley for many, many years, and it would occasionally get the sooty mould and the associated scale, and it tends to grow through it, so we don't do anything about it here in the gardens. That's the problem. In terms of how to get rid of it on the patio, well, I think jet washing is probably the only thing you can do there.
I think in this case, and because it's so bad, I would definitely treat the scale insect, and you can still get hold of systemic insecticides which will travel up through the plant, and because the scale insect sucks the sap of plants, it'll enter into them and it will kill them. And usually one treatment given as soon as possible this season will keep them clear for the rest of the year. Having said that, sometimes if they do come back, they come back in force in midsummer, and a treatment at that time is also possible, but the plant is in flower at that season, so it's unwise to use a systemic insecticide, but use one that works by contact action, something that contains, say, fatty acids, which is a posh name for soap, and that will also clean up the foliage as well as kill the scale insect. For people who are not familiar with Trachylospermum, I would say that it's an evergreen climber with beautiful fragrant flowers, and it's often called the star jasmine.
Now, the up-to-date information on those chemical recommendations that Sky has made will be on the scale insect webpage, and often it does change in spring, so when the manufacturers launch their new products, so do check back at that time.
The RHS Gardening Advice Team. Members can contact the team by phone, post or email, or anyone can chat to us about your gardening issues in person, in our gardens or at our advice stands at any of the RHS flower shows. And if you aren't a member yet, why not join? You can find details of all the benefits of membership at rhs.org.uk/join. And one of those perks is, of course, free entry to all four of our gardens: Hyde Hall in Essex, Rosemore in Devon, Harlow Carr in North Yorkshire, and Wisley here in Surrey. Here's a selection of events happening this January. Find out how to make your own herbal remedies for everyday ailments using plants from the garden with our Medicinal Herbs Workshop at Harlow Carr. That's on the 8th of February. Or, if floristry floats your boat, join our Floristry Basics Workshop at Hyde Hall on the 22nd of February. This is a practical workshop, and it will help you develop the skills and confidence to create your very own gift bouquet. Learn the basic skills of beginner's gardening at Rosemore on the 4th of February, with a seasonal look around the garden, learning what needs to be done at this time of year and how you can apply this to your own garden at home. The session will cover plant identification, pruning and seed sowing. Discover how to capture beautiful images of the tropical butterflies in the Wisley Glasshouse on our Butterfly Photography Morning at Wisley. That's on the 1st of February, and enjoy exclusive access to the glasshouse before it opens to the public at 10. Booking is essential for these events, and discounted places are available for RHS members. But don't forget, there are lots more events at RHS Gardens, many of which are free. For details of these, see rhs.org.uk/event search. That's all we have time for in this edition. Remember, you can still download our special December 2016 edition of the RHS Members podcast, which we made available to everyone, RHS members and not. It features in-depth horticultural guidance and an inspirational interview with Baroness Floella Benjamin, the newly appointed RHS Ambassador for Young People and Communities. That special programme is available to download for free from iTunes and from the RHS website. That's all for now. We'll be back in a fortnight. For now, from me, Jenny Bowden, and all the podcast team, goodbye.